Welcome back to Across the Movie Aisle, presented by Bulwark Plus. I am your host, Sonny Munch, culture editor of The Bulwark. I'm joined today by Peter Suderman and Chris Orr, who's filling in for Alyssa on her maternity leave. Chris, Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderfully.
I'm happy to be talking about movies with friends.
First up in controversies and non-controversies, indie director Sean Baker is in trouble. No, he's not in movie jail. And the cops have nothing on him. No, he's in much worse trouble than that. He's in Twitter trouble, folks. That's right. The director of Tangerine, the Florida Project, and the forthcoming Red Rocket made the mistake of liking some tweets by Democratic poll Tulsi Gabbard, in which Gabbard suggested that Kyle Rittenhouse and the verdict around him was correct. Here's the tweet that Baker liked. Quote, "The jury got it right, finding Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges. The fact that charges were brought before any serious investigation is evidence that the government was motivated by politics, which itself should be criminal," end quote. A little spicy, perhaps, but not out of the realm of reasonable discussion when it comes to a divisive trial and the sort. Everything here is kind of tragic and complicated and more nuanced than, you know, either of the sides that are arguing about it really want to allow for. And if there's anything we know Twitter loves, it's nuance, which is why, as soon as news began to spread that Baker had liked Gabbard's tweet, there was much soul searching as people considered the deeply difficult situation and the broken victims at the heart of it. LOL, JK. Baker was quickly condemned as a racist, a white supremacist, and worst of all, a Republican, all for liking a former Democratic congresswoman and Democratic presidential candidate's tweet. Now, the funniest part of all this was a certain segment of, I think fair to say, a left-wing segment of film Twitter, which is most of film Twitter, let's be honest, decided that Baker, whose first two films, Tangerine and The Florida Project, which were about trans hookers chasing their dreams and a child living in crushing poverty in the shadow of Disney World, respectively.
Man, obviously a conservative provocateur.
Actually been a secret reactionary this whole time. That's what's going on here. These sort of teapot tempests are frequently not worth getting worked up about, and we ignore 99% of them on this show. But what's interesting about this is that Sean Baker is a relatively niche filmmaker. His films rely on getting decent buzz from the film media, film blogs, personalities on film Twitter and social media, those sorts of people. And that's how they generate excitement. He doesn't have a $40 million advertising budget to get folks to the movies. He needs critics and he needs indie movie lovers rallying to his cause. And a campaign aimed at making him radioactive politically could potentially be devastating, be like actually very, very bad for the commercial and critical hopes of Red Rocket. Peter, how crazy is it that merely liking a tweet somebody else authored in the midst of just, you know, your day-to-day, you're scrolling around on Twitter, boom, like this tweet. How crazy is it that this can be seen as a strike against an entire filmmaker's body of work, his entire body of work? And also, like, frankly, I saw people calling on people to blacklist him, to blackball him, to say, like, nobody should go see his movie, nobody should support him. What sort of world do we live in where this is how people judge art?
Well, I think this is a very serious matter. And frankly, I think blackballing is not enough. We need to have a Senate hearing. And I won't rest until this is an issue in a presidential debate and we hear what the next two-party
it will be
worth of candidates have to say about this. I think this needs to be elevated to the most important issue in America right now. I can't think of anything more salient. And Sonny, the fact that you would minimize this is I just can't believe it. That's all I've got to say.
Terrible. It's terrible of me.
This is ridiculous. Look, Twitter is kind of bad. And it brings
kind
out...
Look,
there are good parts of Twitter, right? I mean, your DVD tweets are good sometimes. My dog tweets are pretty good. I mean, it's mostly because my dogs are good. It's not actually me or the tweets. It's just the dogs, right? But there's good stuff on Twitter, and you don't have to use it badly, and you don't have to use it stupidly. But for reasons that you can kind of explain, but also I don't think are necessarily built into the medium. It doesn't have to be the case that Twitter brings out the worst in people, but it does. And we've fallen into an equilibrium in which people feel like Twitter is encouraging and empower them to just be absolute asshats all the time and to be incredibly petty asshats about the tiniest, most meaningless little things, right? Like, whatever you think about the cases here, about the Rittenhouse case, about the Ahmaud Arbery case, like, a filmmaker, somebody who has made some interesting little arty films that, as we were talking about in your intro, like, just in no way code conservative or to the right. Like, they very obviously code to the left if you're going to assign any kind of political valence to them. And I'm not saying that they are political. Like, they're not op-eds. They're not necessarily, intensely political films.
They're not partisan.
But they're, if you were partisan, going to assign a left-right spectrum to them, it's very clear where they would fall. And the fact that this person has simply liked a tweet
by a Democratic
people have decided to make that like a line in the sand and something that, that they're going to care about at all, I think just shows, first of all, how silly and how petty a lot of the folks who end up writing about movies end up being, right? Like, they have decided to bring their personal political hobby horses into their public, right? Like, they're sort of public-facing presences in ways that just don't make any sense, right? Like, it's one thing to sort of do political film criticism. It is another thing to just sort of decide that your entire project that, like, in life is not even to care about the films, but to care obsessively about every little thing that is in the public record that a filmmaker, again, not even all that big a filmmaker, an interesting one, but not somebody who has like the world's biggest platform or anything, but to care obsessively about every little thing that person has entered into the public record up to and including tweets in a way. And it's just crazy, and it's just nonsensical, and it drives me, like, I try not to think about this stuff because it actually kind of exercises me and drives me nuts when I do. I think the real villain here is Sonny Bunch, who made me do a whole segment on this. And, like, the best way to, like, honestly, the best way to react to this sort of thing is to try and, as much as possible, just ignore it. But if we have to pay attention to it, gosh, you should say this is ridiculous and bad and people shouldn't be doing this stuff.
Okay, so we don't have to pay attention to it. And as somebody who is relatively on the left, relative to the left of the other of you two, like, Tulsi Gabbard is not a Democratic politician in any meaningful sense. She's a weird freak. She had an absurd presidential run that went nowhere. I think
there were things about it. I actually I even just, liked.
She's clearly a Democratic politician. I mean, it's not. Well, I mean, not, in she's the, not Ron Paul
in the technical sense. Yes, she is. My guess is that if you were to do a poll on Democrats and what they thought of Tulsi Gabbard, she would be polling around 20%, maybe 15%. She is a wacko. And she is a wacko who is not a wacko at the center of the Democratic Party in the same way that there are certain wackos who are currently at the center of the Republican Party. So I wouldn't care what she said. I wouldn't care what somebody who retweeted her said. And I certainly wouldn't care what somebody who just liked her tweet said. I mean, we're literally like 4 degrees of separation from anything meaningful and significant at all.
Well, see, so this is what I want to drill down on here, because it doesn't really, like, it's not interesting to me what the actual tweet was about. What concerns me about this, and what I think is actually relevant, and we do have to discuss, because it has an impact on how award season campaigns play out. It has an impact on how, like, actual release strategies will play out. You know, if this thing becomes toxic, A24 is just going to dump it. They've done that plenty of times. They have no compunction about just being like, we gave it a shot, and it's not going to work out. The fact that this sort of like tertiary social interaction can turn an entire wing of criticism against somebody is a real problem for the state of film criticism, is a real problem for the state of film viewing. I think, like, it gets to a real problem with how people actually watch movies, right? Now, look, here's the thing, Chris, and this is what I want to get your take on this. Peter and I have kind of a vested interest in being able to separate art and artist, right? We have, I'm further to the right than Peter. Peter is further to the right than most Hollywood folks. But, like, we just, like, if we only liked people who we agreed with, we'd have 3 Atlas Shrugged movies, and that's about it, right? So you know, there's that angle to it. But you don't have that same problem necessarily. You could excise all sorts of people who disagree with you, and you wouldn't have to get rid of that many. So from the left's perspective, like, isn't this bad for left-wing film writing and film criticism to like boil everything down to this very singular perspective?
Let me just say, I don't feel like I speak for the left. Intend
the liberal
to speak
you're,
for the
you're
left.
Center left. I mean, center left.
Sure, but I'm not speaking. But I couldn't agree more with you. I think anyone who thinks they don't want to see Sean Baker's future movies because he liked a tweet by a crazy politician once, like, that's insane. That's absolutely nuts. I have not seen Red Rocket. I look forward to seeing Red Rocket. I was a very big fan of the Florida Project and actually had the incredible good luck to, at the Critics' Choice Awards, was at the Florida Project table. So I got to spend some time with the super young actress, 6, 8 years old, who was a delight. She was absolutely fabulous, and spent time with her parents. And I sadly got to see Willem Dafoe not win supporting actor, which,
ooh,
you know, I think the look on his face, like, he felt it. You could tell. I don't know anything about Sean Baker's politics, and I don't really care.
Should we?
So part of the reason that critics can tank a film like this and that A24 is responsive to them is that critics vote in award ceremonies. And it's Rotten Tomatoes, right? And so the scores matter, and the studios, especially the indie studios, who have to do more marketing with fewer dollars in many ways for their films. They care about Rotten Tomatoes, but they also really, really, really care about the end of the year awards, because because the critics awards, even the ones that, you know, you would think are sort of, oh, that's relatively small, like most people have not heard of this. They do in some ways drive attention, and they can help build an Oscar campaign, which can make a tiny film in the end. And so, you know, to Sonny's point about why this matters is that studios have to pay attention to critics to some extent, because those critics are voting on on honors that that make a difference to their bottom lines. And I don't exactly see how you get around that, except to sort of have, if you had critics with a different set of priorities.
If you had better critics, had critics who were not willing to make grand decisions superficial politics.
This is the argument that we have consistently made on this show, is that critics should not pay that much attention to this stuff. But on Twitter, on social media, in the, you know, sort of modern Rotten Tomatoes, always online film Twitter, film criticism, online film criticism ecosystem, critics appear to have pretty clear incentives, both in terms of their peers, in terms of their other critics, as well as in terms of audience incentives, to treat this stuff as incredibly serious, and to in some cases make a bigger deal about filmmakers' likes than about the film itself. And it's messed up, but I also don't know that there's a thing that can be done, except, you know, to have a good podcast where that doesn't happen.
Somebody should make that podcast. All right. I don't really want to ask if this is a controversy or non-controversy, because it's obviously a controversy and it's obviously a controversy. The stupidness of it all drives me crazy.
It's a quantum-versy. It's both at once.
Wait, it's a controversy.
It's multiversal. Yep.
Multiversal. This is actually
going to be the inciting incident in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
But I want to send us out with the idea, and the idea is this: get off Twitter. That's just get off Twitter forever. Go away. If all of us were off Twitter, it would be a much better place. All right. If you enjoy the show more than Twitter, and who doesn't? It's way better than Twitter. Please head over to atma.thebulwark.com, where we'll have a special bonus episode on our favorite Will Smith performances. Speaking of which, on to our main event, King Richard. The heartwarming and mildly hagiographic cinematic portrait of Richard Williams, played by Will Smith, dropped on HBO Max and in theaters this week. Williams, of course, is the father of Venus and Serena Williams, and anyone who followed tennis in the mid-90s, or really sports in general in the mid-90s, was familiar with Richard Williams. He's a showboat. He's a braggart. He was a relentless hound for attention. And Williams was often thought of as everything that's wrong with tennis dads. What this movie presupposes is maybe he isn't. Yes, time and again, we are hit with the message that Richard Williams was right, that it was those other tennis dads burning their kids out who were wrong, and that his girls are all going to grow up to be successes. And as such, it doesn't really matter that the neighbors don't like the fact that he makes his kids practice in the rain. And we know that that actually is right, because we know how Serena and Venus turned out. And they are executive producers on this film, so you have to imagine that there was some sort of agreement with the portrayal of the father. Look, here's the thing. King Richard is your pretty standard inspirational Oscar bait fare. Will Smith is going to get an Oscar nomination for this. I would bet $10,000 on it, and it will be well deserved. He has mastered a whole array of tricks and ticks here, from the slight stoop that he walks with to a not quite Cajun accent, all the way down. Just every actorly trick. He's doing a lot of acting in this, folks. I enjoyed him. I always enjoy Will Smith. I think he's a delightful screen presence. He's genuinely charismatic. He's very good here. The movie is fine. I want to say I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was perfectly fine. But I want to highlight just briefly my favorite moment in the picture, and it's this. It's maybe my favorite moment in any inspirational sports picture. So it comes relatively early on. Richard has a gun and is going to murder a gangbanger who has been hitting on one of his daughters and who beat him up, like, viciously moments earlier. And right as he, Richard, is walking up to the storefront, gun in hand, ready to do the deed, the gangbanger is miraculously murdered right in front of him. Like a guardian angel swooped down and showed up with an Uzi to mow this guy down in order to keep Richard from going to prison, an act that would have derailed the careers of Venus and Serena, obviously the most important factor here. Later on, and this is really just the capper to the whole thing, later on, the remaining gang members swing by the tennis court to let Venus and Serena know that they are cheering them on. It's like, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in a movie like this. Chris, what did you make of King Richard? And do you have anything that is that equally bizarre that you could remember from a movie of this sort?
I don't think I can match the bizarreness of that. I was a tennis player growing up. I was obviously a vastly more mediocre tennis player than that, but I was a very, very, very serious tennis player in my teens. And one thing that I just loved about the movie is there's one scene that's nothing but footwork behind the baseline. I mean, tennis movies tend to be terrible about tennis. Like Match Point, Woody Allen's movie, like neither one of those people knew how to hold a racket at all. Like not a single hit they ever made was meaningful. So I liked the fact that this movie was serious about the tennis. And, you know, and as Sonny, if you played tennis too, I mean, you know that like tennis parents and specifically tennis fathers are a specific horror, like out of Greek mythology. I mean, they're just the absolute worst there is. Jennifer Capriati comes up repeatedly in this film, and her father was atrocious. And I'm trying to think. Mary Pierce, French Canadian player. Her father was so terrible that he was banned from like ever attending a single tennis match. It's a real thing.
Andre Agassi wrote like a whole book about how much he hated his dad.
Of course. Right. Did this movie feel like it, you know, it gave King Richard an easy run. Of course it did, because that's what the movie's expected to do. But it had, you know, I did think it had its moments, including a few with his wife, of sort of calling him to count. Honestly, I would say the most fascinating and bizarre thing about this movie to me is its whole premise, which is let's have a whole movie that leads up to Venus Williams losing in her first professional tournament. And Venus Williams was an amazing female tennis player, probably one of the 10 or 20 best of all time. But her sister was the best of all time. I mean, this is a little bit about making a biopic about the raising of Jim Belushi. I mean, it's just weird. I kept waiting for the film to get to Serena because
well, you could drill down another level on this, right, and say that it's a movie. It is a movie in which the arguably two of the 10 greatest female tennis players of all time. It's actually about their dad. It's not really about them at all, which is I can understand that criticism. But, you know, then you wouldn't have an Oscar vehicle for Will Smith. You'd lose the whole point of the thing if it was just about them.
Well, although, I don't know the details, but I assume his tennis parenting extended to Serena. I doubt that he just stopped being a tennis parent when Venus turned 15.
Well, there's the line where he says he had to put her in Venus's shadow to, you know, make sure that she could really excel. I know. I take your point. I absolutely take your point. What? And I agree.
Why do you hate Serena, Sonny? Why do you hate her so much?
I don't hate her. I don't hate Serena. I think she's fine. I just think the movie, you know, the movie is building up to a point. No, wait, I do like your point that this is a great tennis movie because it is the best tennis movie, qua tennis movie that I think I've ever seen. From the training to the fact that everybody who is on the courts actually looks like they can hit a tennis ball, which is not always the case. I mean, like, it's a bunch of juniors mostly, but the juniors all look like juniors who can actually play tennis, which is nice. There's a moment in the movie where they open a can of fresh tennis balls at the start of a tournament, and I could smell it in my nose. I had like the sense memory of it in my nose as I was watching it. Peter, I do not believe you were a tennis player. Growing up, as an outsider looking into this niche subculture, what did you make of King Richard?
I mean, I think I took two tennis lessons, and I don't remember. And I'm not even actually sure I did. I might have hallucinated it, but it's possible. No, I assumed you guys loved this movie because it was about the dad. And like last week, you guys complained that Belfast should have been more about the dad. And here we have a movie that is more about the dad. And I just thought
I thought it was good.
Chris and Sonny bait here.
I enjoyed it being more about the dad. Yeah. I don't want a movie about Serena Williams. I watch her play plenty of tennis. I want to see crazy Richard Williams.
Sure. So look, I didn't hate this movie. It is so wholesome. How could you hate it? Like, this movie isn't just earnest. It is possibly the least ironic movie I have ever seen, right? It's and I mean, that is like I'm busting on it a little bit, but it's also pretty nicely done. It's got good, clear characters, very solid acting throughout with a big centerpiece performance, like a nice, straightforward narrative progression with a list of challenges that need to be knocked down and are like set up well enough that they don't feel like they're coming out of the blue. It all basically works. There is like a kind of there's something a little bit grating to me about the pureness of the Oscar baiting here, right? Like, this is a flawless diamond of Oscar bait. And, you know, it in a way that's like, it's kind of impressive to see that someone has managed to hone a project into something so pure. But there's also nothing rough or out of place in this movie. There is not one single thing that makes this movie more interesting than it, like, with the possible exception of some of the very small technical details about tennis, none of which are dwelled upon. But like, I wanted to see a whole scene about the chessboard bit and about how there's like 214 positions. And instead, this is like a throwaway line that's just like, oh, we're going to show you that we've done the research on tennis, but we are not going to let that get in the way of this moment of like training and triumph and struggle and like it, what comes after that, right? There's no unexpected beat or truly bizarre detail. Go ahead.
But Peter, I mean, the one thing I would say is it has the exact precise level of making it more complicated. It has the exact precise level of making Will Smith's character less likable and less heroic. It is
just a hair, just a touch, threatening to make them watch. What was it? Cinderella?
Driving off, or driving, right? Getting away, in the argument with his wife, right? It gets you the moment that they play in a traditional Oscars year. I guess who knows if we're going to have one of those, but like in the old days in the ceremonies, they would play, you know, for the best actor and best actress, they would play a bit where there was a lot of acting happening, usually at the very end of the second act, right? It's the moment where like things really fall apart and like break down, or very occasionally it's the moment in the third act where things are about to come back together, right? And this movie had those beats like in the most Oscar telecast from 1994 way I can think of in a very long time.
This is exactly it. It's not that it fails to complicate the story. It's that it complicates the story exactly enough. It complicates the story, you know, what, 8%, 12%? It complicates the story just a little bit so that you feel like it's not just total hagiography.
But the whole thing just sort of plays like it's like yellow box Cheerios, right? It's very competent and it's very wholesome. It's pretty good for you. You know, it's like, and you're not upset. It's yellow box Cheerios. This is like the best breakfast in America for most people on most days. On the other hand, it's like, oh my God, I've been having this since I was 8 years old. And it's not that interesting either.
Is there a difference? Are there other kinds of Cheerios?
Yeah, there's Honey Nut Cheerios.
Blue box Cheerios.
There's Honey Nut Cheerios.
You call regular Cheerios yellow box Cheerios to differentiate them from the other. Why don't you just call them Cheerios?
Everybody knows what yellow box Cheerios are.
Well, I do because I eat Cheerios every day because I'm boring.
Right.
So I do hope that the Oscar clip in this movie is Will Smith farting. At the Nike executive, because that would make me love, can we just talk very brief. We're going to talk about Will Smith more in the bonus episode and his history of interesting performances. But I am so glad to have him back on the big screen in a big major role. I think that Hollywood is a less interesting and less fun place without him there. And I think he's perfect in this. Like, I can't, there's no other actor I could imagine settling into this role except maybe like Jamie Foxx, if Jamie Foxx was doing something super crazy.
I mean, you can't see him being replaced by Idris Elba again.
I mean, Idris Elba's pretty good too, but
Idris Elba has that scraggly beard, just
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but Idris Elba does not have
or
the
can have that scraggly innate, beard anyway.
He does not have the innate warmth that Will Smith kind of exudes in even in Richard Williams, who again is like I don't think people if you don't remember tennis from the mid 90s, you can't remember just how like omnipresent Richard Williams was and how like kind of grating he was.
He was LeVar Ball. He was,
yes,
LeVar
exactly.
Ball.
But
can you explain that to somebody who doesn't?
LeVar Ball, father of two current NBA players, and the man who most wants to get
he
attention.
He made himself the center of attention while his sons were about to come up into the NBA.
Both of them lottery picks, both of them top five lottery picks. And LeVar Ball started a sneaker brand called Big Ball because that's his last name.
Sure.
And whatever. He was that awful, awful man.
Yeah.
This
movie presupposes that he is not that awful man. He's actually a genius.
Right. And so this actually, I thought, was an interesting choice, and one that I'm not quite so sure about, is that it suggests that the plan that he made for his daughters before they were born.
That's what he
was
says.
Basically a good idea and not kind of crazy and controlling. And I, obviously things turned out really well for his daughters. And so maybe the evidence is reality. And but at the same time,
Peter, it was a terrible idea. It was an atrociously bad and horrific idea that had a 1 in 50,000 chance of succeeding. No. And it succeeded. But that doesn't make it a good plan.
And this movie seems to want to treat that plan as something that we should be impressed by rather than something that we should look at and think, wow, that's kind of nuts. And to me, it's something about it worked, whether it was the plan itself or whether it was just that his daughters are, truly exceptional and were raised in a way, right? Like, forget the sort of the plan, like, here's what we expect from you by the time you're 20 aspect of it. Well, there was a rigorous raising of his children.
And let's forget the fact that they had three sisters who never played professional tennis. Imagine what it was like to be one of them.
Right. And so if there's a weird thing about this movie, I don't think it's necessarily the choice to focus on the dad as the central character. It is the fact that Venus and Serena don't seem to have a whole lot of agency or inner life in this film. I don't mean in real life. I mean the portrayal of them here. They don't quite come across as props, but they do seem a little bit like, honestly, like pets. Right. They basically do what they're told. They've been trained and molded in a certain way. Right. They do have some like desires of their own. Right. We see the younger one just basically entering into a tournament on her own. But we don't really see how they feel about all of this except with a couple of very, very small scenes that are just enough to suggest that they seem to be, on board with what dad wants.
Well, the whole third act conflict comes from Venus wanting to be in the tournament and pushing back against her father. And like, I think the movie does a little bit better job with that. But again, it's not really about them. The movie is about King Richard. It's the Fresh Prince moving into his King Richard role. And like,
oh my goodness. I hadn't even thought that. Did you do that on purpose?
I'm stepping on my line. That's sort of the line I was going to use in my intro for the bonus, but yeah.
Giving away your best material for free here, Sonny.
One last note before we sign off. John Bernthal. Love John Bernthal. John Bernthal should be in every movie. There should be a John Bernthal cloning project. He gives him one role in every film.
I'm not sure I really noticed him until Wolf of Wall Street. And God, I have loved him in everything he's been in since then. And he's fantastic in this movie. And fantastic in a different way. I mean, we've often seen him playing sort of really physical, macho characters. And in this case, he's kind of the opposite. He's kind of the let's be gentler. Let's treat these.
He plays, for the record, he plays the girl's last coach in the movie. He's running the tennis academy that they wind up in at the end of the film.
And he's wonderful and has one of the best mustaches I've ever seen on film in my life.
He steals scenes from Will Smith in a movie in which Will Smith is very good, and that is hard to do.
John Bernthal, everybody. Gotta love him. So what do we think? Thumbs up or thumbs down on King Richard? Peter?
Thumbs up.
Chris?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up from me as well. I liked it. I'm excited to see how much bait this Oscar bait pulls in. All right, so that's it for this week's show. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. If you loved it, make sure to check out our members only bonus episode on Will Smith and his movies at atma.thefullwork.com. Make sure to tell your friends. Strong recommendation from a friend is basically the only way to grow podcast audiences. If we don't grow, we'll die. If you did not love today's episode, please complain to me on Twitter @SonnyBunch. I'll convince you that it is, in fact, the best show in your podcast feed. See you guys next week.